ShareCare is the leading online health and wellness engagement platform, providing millions of consumers with a personal, results-oriented experience by connecting them to the most qualified health resources and programs they need to improve their health. It's time now for ShareCare Radio on RadioMD.com. Here's your host, Dr. Daria.
Hi, welcome to ShareCare Radio. Dr. Daria here. Let's just jump into the health news of the week for now. First off is that you may have heard measles seems to be back. This measles outbreak that began in California has continued to extend, sickening at least 85 people in seven states and 68 people sickened in California, including 48 that were directly linked to Disneyland theme park in California. Now, half of those people are aged 20 or older, and most were not vaccinated. Now, why is this happening? It's because we're seeing a lot of people that are not getting full immunizations. And a recent study in Northern California that was released this month found five geographic pockets where children were significantly more likely to be unimmunized by their third birthday. Almost one in four toddlers in a part of Vallejo, which is a city in the San Francisco Bay Area, are unimmunized or incompletely immunized. So let's go back. What is this history of measles? If you look at it in the 1960s, there were 500,000 cases of measles every year in the U.S., and over 400 people died from it every year. Then we got the measles vaccine, which is now given as part of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. And as a result, by 2000, measles was declared eliminated in the U.S. as a result of vaccination. But it's still rampant worldwide. Thousands of people die from measles every year across the world, and so it's really easy if somebody with measles travels to the U.S., they could spread it again, which is why it's so important that people remain vaccinated, mainly because measles is so contagious. So there's two things about measles which makes it really easy to get. One is that it has something called a very high attack rate. And so that means that if you are not immunized and you are exposed to measles, you have a 75 to 90% chance of catching measles. And as an infectious disease, that's really, really high. Number two is that it's very easy to be exposed to it if you're in the area with somebody else who has measles. So measles, if somebody coughs and those droplets from measles will remain in the air for hours. So if they cough in your grocery store or in an office or in the line at Disneyland and you come in hours later and breathe that, if you're not vaccinated for measles, again, 75 to 90% chance that you'll get it. It's really important to also note that there is no treatment for measles as far as a cure per se. It requires supportive care to help somebody's body hopefully try to heal itself and overcome the virus. We also have to remember that there are many complications from measles. Ear infections, which can lead to hearing loss, pneumonia, which is the most common cause of death in people who get measles, seizures, severe developmental disorders, blindness, brain swelling, and even death. So this is not a benign illness. The symptoms to look for are, first, it'll look just like a common cold. You'll have slight fever, cough, and runny nose. You should also have some eye redness. So look for that. If you notice that, that could be a red flag. But it'll take a few days until somebody develops that rash that we really know to expect from measles. So look for those. What to do? Vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. That is the only way we can protect ourselves from measles and make sure that you're up to date on your vaccines. For kids, remember that's a vaccine at age 12 to 15 months and 4 to 6 years to keep y'all safe. All right, next study is an interesting one on lead toxicity, and that was that lead negatively impacts cognitive function in boys more than girls. A recent study came out, and we had known that boys, for some reason, seem to be more susceptible to the cognitive effects of lead. Didn't know why, and it appears that the female hormones of estrogen and estradiol could be protective and could protect girls' brains a little bit more than they protect boys. Things to look for. If your child is at risk for lead toxicity, then you should talk to your doctor about screening them. Now, those risks include living in a house built before 1978, especially if it was built before 1950, if they've had any relatives with lead poisoning, if they eat off of artisanal pottery or ceramic vessels, or some home remedies could be high in lead. So check those. If you think you're at risk, talk to your pediatrician about having your child checked for lead. Now, more news about Ebola. And that's what the World Health Organization met the other day at its headquarters to address the agency's response to the Ebola outbreak, since there was some strong criticism that they just didn't respond in time most recently. They've also dedicated an emergency fund and increased the WHO's workforce for such emergencies from 1,000 people to 1,500. Interestingly, with Ebola, is that as countries are starting to get a handle on Ebola, it's making it a little bit harder to study the vaccines. Now, the vaccines that they're trying to run are going to need to enroll 27,000 people at risk of infection, and they're hoping to do that in Liberia, but they're starting to have fewer and fewer cases of confirmed cases and really to get a handle on it, making it harder for the drug companies to find enough people at risk. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to be able to get a vaccine approved. Vaccines could still be submitted to regulators using efficacy data for non-human primate experiments, plus proof of safety and immune system response in humans. And the NIH may have to move some testing to neighboring Sierra Leone and end up approving it based on a combination of factors so that we can still get this vaccine moving forward and protect lives. There have been some new safety concerns around some promising new cancer drugs, unfortunately, and it's been a really exciting drug in which they have they're combining T cells to the body's T cells to be attracted by antibodies to the tumor cells. But top oncology researchers are concerned about the emerging technologies because they said that they've seen repeatedly in clinical trials that you could have a fatal buildup of toxic debris from the killed tumor cells and the damage to healthy tissue. So such side effects could block regulatory approval if they aren't controlled. Now, in some trials of two new approaches known as CAR T cells, they're specific antibodies, and they've eliminated all traces of blood cancer in 40% to 90% of patients who had no remaining options. It's really fascinating because what they do is they combine these immune T cells removed from the body, and they genetically attach it to an antibody that's set to attack a specific tumor cell. So you get this super killing T cell that specifically targets that tumor cell. But when it kills a tumor, it releases inflammatory chemicals called cytokines into the bloodstream that can cause fever, low blood pressure, and rapid heart rate, which can be dangerous. So researchers are looking at some other anti-inflammatory methods to kind of tame those side effects and even building in suicide switches into these CAR T cells. So we're going to be watching and evaluating further because potentially this has an immense impact on the treatment on cancer. Interestingly, moving from that to infertility, and scientists have found that chronic stress activates a hormone that reduces fertility even after that stress has ended, and that blocking that hormone returns female reproductive systems back to normal. So that hormone is called gonadotropin inhibitory hormone, and that is a hormone that suppresses fertility, and it even remains high after that stressor returns back to normal. Now, we can understand evolutionarily why this would happen, because women wouldn't want to be having children in times of war and famine, but adaptively, we don't have that kind of situation as in today's developed world, at least, and it's not as relevant now. So studies showed that effects of chronic stress can last, but that blocking that hormone can make women able to be as fertile as they would be without having that stress in place. Lastly, we found that napping helps infants' memory development. We know that sleep is so important for brain development, but a new study from the University of Sheffield revealed that napping helps infants develop and retain new behaviors that they have learned. In a study over 200 children, researchers showed that daytime naps of about 30 minutes or more, at least 30 minutes, helped infants to retain and remember new behaviors, especially if those behaviors and activities were things that they had done just prior to their nap. So they found that they previously thought that children learned best when they're wide awake and well rested. But this study showed that having a nap after learning something helps the child retain it more. Makes it really important to make sure that we're reading books and even doing a little bit of learning before their naps, because it appears that it's not just the sleep that's beneficial and the amount of sleep that's beneficial, but the timing as well. So it's something to make sure you're doing maybe a little extra book right before they go to bed, before the nap, and before they go to bed at night. So there you have it, the top health news that you'll need to know this week to keep you well and informed. I'm Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for tuning in, and stay well.